We're looking at the end of chapter 7 and going through chapter 8. We're finishing up with Gideon. This is our third night on Gideon because it's more of a narrative, more of an account than some of the other judges have had. So let's start at chapter 7, verse 24. And I need somebody to read verses 24 and 25. And then, okay, Carrie, and then somebody else to take the first three verses of chapter 8. All right, Jamie. Carrie and Jamie, we're good to go.
All Mount Ephraim, saying, come down against the Midianites and take before them the waters unto Bethbara and Jordan. Then all of the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together and took the waters unto Bethbara and Jordan. And they took two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeeb. And they slew Oreb upon the rock Oreb, and Zeeb they slew at the winepress of Zeeb, and pursued Midian, and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon on the other side of the Jordan.
Now the Ephraimites asked Gideon, why were you treated us like this? Why didn't you call us when you went to fight Gideon? And they challenged him vigorously. But he answered them, what have I accomplished compared to you? Aren't you the gleanings of Ephraim's grapes? Aren't the gleanings of Ephraim's grapes better than the full grape harvest of Ezer? God gave Oreb and Zeeb, the Midianite leader, into your hands. What was I able to do compared to you? At this, their resentment against them.
All right. Thank you both for reading. You're probably catching up, that we're catching up from last week. We're picking up from where we left off last week. So here is number one. Originally, according to chapter 6, verse 35, and don't be afraid to reference that. That's why that's there. Gideon had called men from the tribes of, and then there are four tribes. What are those four tribes? Give me one. Manasseh. Asher. Oh, thanks. Naphtali and Zebulun. Those are four tribes up in the northern part of Israel, and that's the area where all this stuff was going down. So he called men from those tribes because they were close. Didn't have to transport troops over long distances. So originally he called men from those four tribes to fight against the, and there's a blank before Midianites. And what I want you to put in that blank is what the text says, the fleeing Midianites. How did Gideon defeat the Midianites so that they fled? He had 300 guys. God gave him the plan. Gideon worked God's plan. It worked flawlessly. And so now the Midianites are in flight because of those 300, and Gideon is calling Israelite soldiers to come out and chase them down and give them the last 1-2 kill punch. So the fleeing Midianites, once routed, Gideon also called men from the tribe of, and this is where the contention came in, chapter 3, the tribe of Ephraim. Likely because their pursuit took them, and that word would be south. The Midianites headed south down the Jordan Valley. So they're up north. They engage the Midianites with the 300, having the trumpets and the torches and the pitchers over the torches. They blow the trumpets. They break the torch, the pitchers, and the torches shine out in the darkness, and the Midianites kill themselves and then run off. And now they're chasing them south down the Jordan Valley. And Gideon calls for the Ephraimites to come out. After successfully dispatching the blank leaders of the Midianites, two leaders of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeeb, yeah, too many somethings. The Ephraimites blanked vigorously with Gideon. They contended, they fussed, they argued, they rowed, they were upset because he had not called them at the blank time he called the other Israelites. At the same time, called them later, and they didn't like that. You ever notice in life, don't matter what you do, somebody's not going to like it. Gideon blanked with them, and the word to put there is reasoned. He reasoned with them. Now, you won't find that word specifically in the text, but that's exactly what he did, and I wanted to point that out because where is he when God approaches him? He's hiding from the Midianites. He's got a little bit of wheat, and he's trying to winnow that wheat so they can have it for food because the Midianites are taking everything. The angel says, "Greetings to you, valiant warrior." And he says, "Well, I'm no warrior. I'm the least tribe and the least house in the tribe and the least in my family." So here's this guy who has followed God's guidance and leadership. And now he is taking the lead in being a peacemaker. And he's being a peacemaker here by reasoning with people who are upset with him. He doesn't come off high-handed and say, "Well, God's talked to me, he hadn't talked to you, and I waited for him to tell me when to call you, so you need to hush." And go. No, it's not like that. He reasons with them. And how does he reason with them? Well, here's what he does. Gideon reasoned with them that their blank of the grapes, gleaning. What does it mean to glean? You take what's left. You take what's left over. This was in the law. The law of gleaning. I don't know if they called it the law of gleaning. And I should have given you some references for this, but you can do your own research on this. You know how to do that. God said, when you harvest your crops, do not harvest the corners of the fields. Leave the corners of the fields for the poor and those who don't have a means to care for themselves. Now, what did the poor have to do? They had to get out there and work for it. But that's called gleaning. You're going over what's already been harvested. When you harvest your grapes, God said in the law, don't take every grape. You leave some for those who will come behind. And so the poor people could go to the grapevines after they've been harvested. Wouldn't be right to go before they've been harvested, but go after and somebody will have left some. Now, it's always been an interesting question to me because God never said, how much of a corner do you need to leave? Who gets to determine that? Whoever owned that field got to determine how much of a corner to leave. Whoever was in charge of those servants harvesting the grapes could say, leave every other grape or every third grape or every fifth grape, or if I see three grapes when we're done, that's enough. Whatever. But that was left up to the people. It's interesting how God left some things up to us. It's also kind of scary. So their gleaning of the grapes was better than the blank of Gideon's family, that's the Abiezrites. What goes in that blank? The word was vintage, in other words, the main harvest. Our main harvest was scaring the Midianites so bad that they fought themselves and fled. But you were the guys who got the leaders. You got Oreb and Zeem. And what he says there is that blank had given the enemy leaders into their hand. God. So he's bringing God into this and saying, look at what God has done for you providentially. He has given you the enemy leaders. With this, the blank of the Ephraimites subsided. The anger. If there's a way to get anger to subside, that's always better than meeting it with more anger. Diplomatic. Yes, it is diplomatic. Diplomacy. Is that called detente? Yeah. Glasnost. That's, you kids don't know what that means. It's a Russian word means glass nose. Everything's going to be out in the open, and let's talk about this. It's anyway, back from the Cold War.
And we believed it.
We believed it. Yeah. Trusting souls that we are. All right, let's read. We're going to go down through verse 21. So let's read 4 to 9. Who wants to read 4 to 9? Anybody? Oh, somebody's phone's ringing, so it's automatically you. Shannon, you got 4 to 9. And then 10 to 17. Who'll do that? Okay, Janie. And then 18 to 21. Who wants to take up the last section there, 18 to 21? Bobby? Okay, we're good to go.
His 300 men, exhausted, yet keeping up the pursuit, came to the Jordan and crossed it. He said to the men of Succoth, "Give my troops some bread. They are worn out, and I am still pursuing Zeba and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian." But the officials of Succoth said, "Do you already have the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna in your possession? Why should we give bread to your troops?" Then Gideon replied, "Just for that, when the Lord has given Zeba and Zalmunna into my hand, I will tear your flesh with desert thorns and briars." From there he went up to Peniel and made the same request to them, but they answered as the men of Succoth had. So he said to the men of Peniel, "When I return in triumph, I will tear down this tower."
Now Zeba and Zalmunna were in Karkor with their army, about 15,000 men, all who were left of all the army of the people of the east, for there had fallen about 120,000 men who drew the sword. And Gideon went up by the way of the tent dwellers east of Nobah and Jogbaha and attacked the army, for the army felt secure. And Zeba and Zalmunna fled, and he pursued them and captured the two kings of Midian, Zeba and Zalmunna, and he threw all the army into a panic. Then Gideon, the son of Joash, returned from the battle by the ascent of Heres and captured a young man of Succoth and questioned him. And he wrote down for him the officials and elders of Succoth, 77 men. And he came to the men of Succoth and said, "Behold, Zeba and Zalmunna, about whom you taunted me, saying, 'Are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna already in your hand, that we should give bread to your men who are exhausted?' And he took the elders of the city, and he took thorns of the wilderness and briars, and with them taught the men of Succoth a lesson. And he broke down the tower of Peniel and killed the men of the city."
And he said to Zeba and Zalmunna, "What kind of men were they whom you killed at Tabor?" So they answered, "As you are, so are they. Each one resembled the son of the king." Then he said, "They were my brothers, the son of my mother. As the Lord lives, if you had let them live, I would not kill you." And he said to Jether, his firstborn, "Rise and kill him." But the youth would not draw his sword, for he was afraid, because he was still a youth. So Zeba and Zalmunna said, "Rise yourself and kill us, for as a man is, so is his strength." So Gideon rose and killed Zeba and Zalmunna, and took the precious ornaments that they were on their camels' necks.
Excuse me. All right. I titled this one, "The Mistakes of Succoth and Peniel." You can determine for yourself what you want to call it. But number 2 starts this way. Gideon and his blank men came to Succoth. 300. So he's still just with the 300. Does that remind you of David, who had 600 guys that stayed with him? They went all over the countryside with 600 guys, and he's got his 300. They came to Succoth after blank the Jordan, crossing the Jordan. What's significant about crossing the Jordan? They're still in land that is technically Israelite, but it's on the east side of the Jordan River now. This is what property is now in great contention. Jordan. And when we went there to see the Jordan River, at that place there were Israeli guards. They didn't act like they thought any big deal was going to happen, but there were guards there with automatic weapons, machine guns. And they very carefully instructed us several times, you can go in. Oh, thanks, I got one right here. That's why I'm not drinking any of the water. I got a cough drop in there working. You can go in the river, but don't you dare go across, because you see those Syrian guards over there, those Jordanian guards, they will come down and grab you, and you may not be seen for a while. So it's hotly contested area. And it's not like a big river. It's basically a glorified creek. That's what the Jordan River is. So that's, they're crossing that river, going over into what was not originally promised to Israel. But 2.5 tribes said, hey, can we stay over here? We like it over here. And God said, okay, yeah, you can stay over there. So that's where they are. They came to Succoth after crossing the Jordan while in pursuit of Midian. Here, and also at Penuel, a little farther along, he asked for, and I'm sorry for the mistakes I made. I didn't see him until I went to fill this out. But it's supposed to be he asked for bread to feed his men. They essentially blank Gideon. They mock him or taunt him, as he will later say, asking, are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna blank in your hands? Already is what you would put there. Are they already in your hands? In other words, who are they going to support? They want to support the winning team. That's what it sounds like to me. So they're not going to give him any bread because he doesn't already have. And if they saw these two guys come through with their force, how many guys do they have with them? They got 15,000 left. How many does Gideon have? 300. Ooh, impressive. Well, 301, counting God. I guess that's fair to say. At this, Gideon promised to blank and blank both cities. What would you put in those two blanks? He's going to return and punish both cities. Here's something else about Gideon. We saw earlier he's a peacemaker. His people, the Ephraimites, were saying, why didn't you call us? We're upset, we're mad because you didn't call us when you called these other tribes to come out and fight with you. And he said, hey, listen, look what God gave you. He gave you the gleaning, and the gleaning is better than the actual harvest. God put into your hands the two leaders, and their anger subsided. He reasoned with them. Now, these guys are haughtily, it sounds like to me, refusing to help. And he says, all right, you're going to have to pay when I come back through here. And there wasn't any, well, you know, I might win this battle or I might not. No, he was confident he was going to win, based on what apparently he had already all been through. There's so many things in here when you think about it that make it look to me like Gideon, he was a real soldier and a real faithful follower of the Lord. All right. Number three, Zeba and Zalmunna were in a place called blank. Where'd they go? Karkor, with about how many men? 15,000 men. Gideon approached them from a direction that gave him the element of surprise, apparently. That's what it looks like from the text. The army was, that's the Midianite army, was routed. What's it mean to rout an army? You push them out of where they were and made them flee. That's what a rout is. And this is actually the second time they've been routed. The army was routed and the two blanks of Midian were captured. The two kings. Earlier it was the two leaders, two military leaders were captured, and now it's the two kings. So this will be the end of it. At the ascent of Heres, Gideon captured a blank from Succoth, a youth, a young person, who wrote down the blank of the blank leaders of that town. The names. What's that make you think of? We're going to take names. How many leaders? 77. They wrote down the 77 leaders of that town. Now, this is of interest to me. How is that young man, well, how's that man described? He's young, but what does he know? He knows the leaders of his town. He's aware of their names. He can, could you do that? How many members of the cabinet are there? How many members of the Oklahoma Senate can you name? Where are we here? When he returned there with the enemy king's blank, blank. Now, these two blanks, you fill in here what they had used to taunt Gideon. They are not yet in hand. And so he's coming back to Succoth, and guess who he has with him? He's got those two kings. It's interesting to me, he could have killed them where he found them, where he caught them. Could have killed them right there, but he didn't. Did he hang on to them so he could take them back and show them, check it out, guys, me and my 300 with God's help defeated 15,000, and here are the two kings. Remember what you said? Well, remember what I said? Well, here I am. The text says he blanked those 77 with blanks of the wilderness and blanks. That's a lot of blanks. He disciplined those 77 with thorns and briars. That does not sound pleasant. He also tore down the blank of Penuel, the tower of Penuel, and blanked the men of the city. Killed the men of the city. Why is it significant that he tears down their tower? Why would they have a tower in the first place? You don't have radios, you don't have cell phones, you got to put somebody in a tower to keep watch. So everybody who's out in the fields, outside the city gate, the city walls, can hear the trumpet blow when the watchman on the tower sees the enemy approaching. Remember what God told Ezekiel? You are the watchman. I'm setting you as a watchman. If you warn those and they do not flee, their blood is on their heads. But if you fail to warn them, then their blood is on your head. This is all about a watchtower, I believe. Doesn't say that in the text, but that's why they had towers. And now their tower is gone. So if you're living there, you know, oh, we're subject to catastrophe any day because somebody could approach and nobody would ever know. He killed the men of the city, keeping his promise. He promised them, I'm coming back. And he did. Maybe that's where Arnold got that. I'll be back. That guy's got a lot of great quotes, doesn't he? Hasta la vista, baby. Then he commanded Jether, that's how I'm going to pronounce it, his blank blank, his firstborn son, to kill the Midianite kings. But he would not do so because he was blank and blank. He was young and he was afraid. Zeba and Zalmunna told him, that's supposed to be told him, to do it himself. You do it yourself. As the man, I don't know what happened here. What was I drinking? As the man is, so is his strength. The reason I do this is so you have to go back and look at the actual text so you can read it for yourself. That's, you think I'm just messing up. That's all on purpose. Right? Well, yeah. Yeah. All right, somebody read for us. Who will read for us chapter 8, 22 to 27? Who's got that, wants to read? We're getting towards, okay, Matt.
The men of Israel said to Gideon, "Rule over us, you and your son and your grandson also, for you have saved us from the hand of Midian." Gideon said to them, "I will not rule over you, and my son will not rule over you. The Lord will rule over you." And Gideon said to them, "Let me make a request of you. Every one of you give me the earrings from this spoil." For they had golden earrings because they were Ishmaelites. And they answered, We will willingly give them. And they spread a cloak, and every man threw in the earrings of his spoil. And the weight of the gold and earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, besides the crescent ornaments and the pendants, the purple garments worn by the kings of Midian, and besides the collars that were around the necks of their camels. And Gideon made an ephod of it and put it in his city of Ophrah, and all Israel poured after it there, and it became a snare to Gideon and to his family.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Number four, at this juncture, the men of Israel asked Gideon to blank over them, rule over them, together with his sons. Instead, he tells them that blank will rule over them. God will rule over you. He then requests that each man give him an earring of gold from his spoil. What's spoil? When you whip an enemy army, you get all their stuff, and that's where that came from, the spoil. The text tells us they had the earrings because they were Ishmaelites. Who in the world are the Ishmaelites? Sons of Ishmael. Yes, they are sons of Abraham, but not sons through Isaac, sons through his other son born by Hagar, Ishmael. Where do the Ishmaelites also figure prominently, especially in the Genesis account? You remember? When Joseph's brothers sold him, they sold him to a caravan of Ishmaelites. So these could have been earrings that were heirlooms handed down from the days of Joseph.
Was it both earrings or just one?
We do what now? I have no idea if it was both earrings or just one, or if they even wore both earrings. I don't know if they went, you know, like you go to Walmart. Nobody goes to Walmart and buys one earring. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say that. Maybe somebody does. But pirates, yeah. Pirates are hard. Maybe because it just costs a dollar, because you know it's a buccaneer. Yeah. Where are we here? Got me off on pirates. The text tells us they had earrings because they were Ishmaelites. The weight of the earrings donated was how many shekels? 1,700 shekels of gold, or about, anybody figure out the pounds? 350? Deer says 350? No. Did a Google thing, did you? Oh, okay. Well, we'll go with your number because I got a different number. But those, you know, inflation makes a difference. So, at any rate, that's a lot of gold. With this, Gideon, for some reason, formed the gold into an ephod. What's an ephod? That's like an over garment, like a big fancy apron thing that you would wear. The priest had an ephod. And so he made a golden ephod. And he placed it in Ophrah, where all of Israel played the blank with it there. Played the harlot. How do you play the harlot with an ephod? Well, you worship it. You consider that to have the importance of deity. It's crazy. What did the Israelites do as soon as they came out of Egypt and Moses didn't come down off that mountain soon enough for them? They made a golden calf. Have you been around a calf? A little slobbering, bawling calf. They're cute, but do you want that to be your God? Matt.
So 347 pounds sterling?
Oh, sterling.
Is 71 pounds.
Oh, 71 pounds. Okay, because I got 70 pounds. Yeah, don't stop too soon, bro. What's that now?
I mean, never been all there. You know how the Egyptian had all this.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I know that's hard for us to understand, but they were just staying up with their old habits. It kind of tells us maybe we should be out of our old habits too.
Right.
They were just following their old habits.
Well, it's much the same. Some people turn to alcohol. From an outsider's perspective, because I've never been attracted to alcohol, and I look at that and I say, what is wrong with you? Because I don't get drinking something that relieves you of your sense of reason, because I've worked awfully hard for what little smarts I have, and the last thing I want to do is drink or smoke or eat something that will take that away from me. Not, don't get me wrong, I understand that there's a certain amount of euphoria and pleasure that comes from that, or nobody would do it, duh. But the thing is, from an outside perspective, seeing that, you go, that doesn't make any sense at all. But the people who were doing it, somehow it makes sense to them. It doesn't really, but the way they see it, it makes sense. Don?
They did a study with rhesus monkeys and alcohol. Some of the rhesus monkeys actually became alcoholics, where other rhesus monkeys totally rejected the alcohol. So it's just a matter of taste and a matter of
genetics.
What it does in your head.
And I think we understand that, because every single one of us is, we are subject to one kind of sin or another, and most of us multiple kinds of sin. And my sin's different from yours. I didn't mean to say, talking about alcohol, that I'm smart enough not to do that. I'm trying to say, sometimes we look at things and we go, that doesn't make any sense at all. But to other people, it makes enough sense to get involved in it. So the things I am tempted to do that are wrong makes sense to me. Why don't you see it the way I see it? But the bottom line is, if we keep drawing towards God, we'll see everything the way he sees it, and nothing is better for us than to see something as God sees it. Jamie?
So back in chapter 6, he tore down the altar in
yes.
his hometown to Baal, where Lord gathering worship.
And who did it belong to?
To Gideon.
Well, it belonged to his dad.
Well, what he tore down, but
oh, I see.
When he built Mount Ephraim
right.
and put it in his hometown, that was his. And so they were, oh, all of a sudden, this place was coming. Keep doing what we were doing.
And what was his intent when he formed the ephod? I don't know. The text doesn't say. What else became a snare to Israel that was intended originally to be a blessing and was a fantastic blessing initially? Remember the bronze serpent? They were in the wilderness and they rebelled against God, and he sent fiery serpents among them, and they said, Moses, tell God to do something for us. And God said, make a brass serpent, put it on a pole. Everybody who looks at that serpent will be saved from their snake bite once they're bit. And what did they do with that snake later? They gave it a name. They called it Nehushtan, and they worshipped it like a god. It's like, just think about it, and you'll see it doesn't make any sense at all. And yet, those who do research in anthropology, they'll say, you know you're finding humans in an advanced culture when you find evidence of worship, because every human culture worships. It might not make sense what they worship or how they worship, but they all worship. Every human culture, every human society has a sense that there's somebody higher. And atheism has to be taught. But humans worship by nature. And let's finish this out here before we lose all of our time. The ephod became a snare. What's a snare? It's a trap. It's a noose. It'll grab you. To Gideon. Became a snare to Gideon and his household, which, to Jamie's point, you look at his history, how did that happen? And it makes me say, Marty Kessler, you better watch yourself. If it'll happen to Gideon, it can happen to you. All right. Verses 28 to 35. Somebody want to read that really fast? Fast reader? All right, Larry.
Midian was subdued before the sons of Israel, and they did not lift up their heads anymore. And the land was undisturbed for 40 years in the days of Gideon. Then Jerubbaal, the son of Joash, went and lived in his own house. Now Gideon had 70 sons who were his direct descendants, for he had many wives. His concubine, who was in Shechem, also bore him a son, and he named him Abimelech. And Gideon, the son of Joash, died at a ripe old age and was buried in the tomb of his father Joash, in Ephrah of the Abiezites. Then it came about, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the sons of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals, and made Baal be with their god. Thus the sons of Israel did not remember the Lord their God, who had delivered them from the hands of all their enemies on every side. Nor did they show kindness to the house of Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, in accord with all the good that he had done to Israel.
Thank you, Larry. Number 5, we are told that Gideon had blank sons, 70 sons, because he had blank wives, many wives. And he also had a blank in Shechem, a concubine who bore him a son named Abimelech. Now, if the Bible had a soundtrack, when you get to the passage there in verse 31 where it says he named him Abimelech, that's where you would hear dun, 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 dramatic music play in, because you'll see as you read through the rest of it what's going to happen with Abimelech. Number 6, Gideon died at an old age, and as soon as he was dead, the Israelites went after the Baals, and made blank, blank their god. Baal, Berith, their god. That's the Baal of Berith. The text then says that Israel did not blank God, remember God, nor did they show blank to the house of Gideon, kindness to the house of Gideon, in spite of all the blank he had done for them. Good. So the moral of the story is, remember, think about, do not forget. What do we do every week because of what Jesus taught us? We have the Lord's Supper. If we don't have anything else, we have that. And that is a memorial. It's a memorial. When you go to a cemetery or you pass by a cemetery and you look over in there and you see all those headstones are memorials. That's there so whoever's buried in the ground at that point won't be forgotten. That's the idea. And God wants us to remember, and they got into all kinds of trouble because they did not remember. It's not only remembering, though, what goes along with this? Gratitude. Don't just remember, be grateful. Every single one of us are standing on the shoulders of those who've gone before. And it doesn't matter. I mean, we hear that with regard to the military quite often, and we should. But we also should be thinking about everybody who has worked a job, and everybody who's been a responsible citizen, everybody who has upheld law and order, everybody who's tried to do the right thing, whether they were a school teacher or a bottle opener or a nurse, whatever you might be. Try to live a decent life. You've shown your light for Christ, and we're standing on the shoulders of everybody who's gone before. How many saints through the past years have been responsible for keeping this congregation alive and flourishing? And here we are today, and where would we be now without what they have done in the past? We should never forget. We should always have a sense of gratitude in our heart for all of these things. Anybody got anything as we close? The crescent, yeah.
My ears, because in the air countries, it's solar and silver and symbol.
Right.
Crescent star, and the ears mentioned that. As far as I remember, that's the first time the crescent shows up.
Do a little research on the flags of the Arab nations and see how many Arab nation flags have a crescent on there. It's very interesting. I appreciate your all's patience with me. I know my voice was not too good tonight, and I was kind of slow, but appreciate it. Bless your hearts. We're dismissed.